47. Feminine wiles. Yet were the orders not disheartened by so great a defeat, for the light weavers provided spiritual sustenance. They were enticed by those glorious creations to venture on to a second assault. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 21, page 10. "It doesn't make sense," Shallan said. "Pattern, these maps are baffling." The Spren hovered nearby in his three-dimensional form full of twisting lines and angles. Sketching him had proven difficult, as whenever she looked closely at a section of his form, she found that it had so much detail as to defy proper depiction. Pattern asked in his humming voice. Shallan climbed off her bed and tossed the book onto her white-painted writing desk. She knelt beside Yasna's trunk, digging through it before coming out with a map of Roshar. It was ancient and not terribly accurate. Alethkar was depicted as far too large, and the world as a whole was misshapen, with trade routes emphasized. It clearly predated modern methods of survey and cartography. Still, it was important, for it showed the Silver Kingdoms as they had supposedly existed during the time of the Knights Radiant. "Yirithiru," Shallan said, pointing toward a shining city depicted on the map as the center of everything. It wasn't in Alethkar, or Alethela, as it had been known at the time. The map put it in the middle of the mountains, near what might have been modern Yakaved. However, Yasna's annotations said other maps from the time placed it elsewhere. How could they not know where their capital was, the center of the Orders of Knights? Why does every map argue with its fellows? Pattern said, thoughtful. Perhaps many had heard of it, but never visited. Cartographers as well? Shallan asked. And the kings who commissioned these maps? Surely some of them had been to the place. Why on Roshar would it be so difficult to pinpoint? They wished to keep its location secret, perhaps? Shallan stuck the map to the wall using some weevil wax from Yasna's supplies. She backed away, folding her arms. She hadn't dressed for the day yet, and wore her dressing gown, hands uncovered. "If that's the case," Shallan said, "they did too good a job of it." She dug out a few other maps from the time created by other kingdoms. In each, Shallan noted, the country of origin was presented far larger than it should have been. She stuck these to the wall, too. "Each shows Yirithiru in a different location," Shallan said, "notably close to their own lands, yet not in their lands."
"Different languages on each," Pattern said. There are patterns here."
He started to try sounding them out. Shallan smiled. Yasna had told her that several of them were thought to have been written in the Dawn Chant, a dead language. Scholars had been trying for years to...
"Behardan King, something I do not understand. Order, perhaps," Pattern said. "Map? Yes, that would likely be map. So the next is perhaps to draw. Draw, something I do not understand."
"You're reading it?"
"It is a pattern."
"You're reading the Dawn Chant."
"Not well."
"You're reading the Dawn Chant," Shallan exclaimed. She scrambled up to the map beside which Pattern hovered, then rested her fingers on the script at the bottom.
"Behardan, you said? Maybe Beyerdan, Noadon himself."
"Beyerdan? Noadon? Must people have so many names?"
"One is honorific," Shallan said. "His original name wasn't considered symmetrical enough. Well, I guess it wasn't really symmetrical at all, so the Ardents gave him a new one centuries ago."
"But the new one isn't symmetrical either."
"The H sound can be for any letter," Shallan said absently. "We write it as the symmetrical letter to make the word balance, but add a diacritical mark to indicate it sounds like an H so the word is easier to say."
That one can't just pretend that a word is symmetrical when it isn't.
Shallan ignored his sputtering, instead staring at the alien script of what was supposedly the dawn chant. If we do find Yasna's city, Shallan thought, and it does have records, they might be in this language. We need to see how much of the dawn chant you can translate.
I did not read it, Pattern said, annoyed. I postulated a few words. The name I could translate because of the sounds of the cities above.
But those aren't written in the dawn chant.
The scripts are derived from one another, Pattern said. Obviously.
So obvious that no human scholar has ever figured it out.
You are not good with patterns, he said, sounding smug. You are abstract. You think in lies and tell them to yourselves. That is fascinating, but it is not good for patterns.
You are abstract. Shallan rounded the bed and slipped a book from the pile there, one written by the scholar Ali Daughter Hasweth of Shinovar. The Shin scholars were among the most interesting to read, as their perspectives on the rest of Roshar could be so frank, so different. She found the passage she wanted. Yasna had highlighted it in her notes, so Shallan had sent out for the full book. Sabariel's stipend to her, which he was paying, came in very handy. Vatha and Gaz, by her request, had spent the last few days visiting book merchants, asking after Words of Radiance, the book Yasna had given her just before dying. So far, no luck, though one merchant had claimed he might be able to order it in from Kolinar. Urethiru was the connection to all nations, she read from the Shin writer's work, and at times our only path to the outside world, with its stones unhallowed. She looked up at Pattern. What does that mean to you?
It means what it says, Pattern replied, still hovering beside the maps. That Urethiru was well connected. Roads, perhaps?
I've always read the phrase metaphorically. Connected in purpose, in thought, and scholarship.
Ah, lies.
What if it's not a metaphor? What if it's like you say? She rose and crossed the room toward the maps, resting her fingers on Urethiru at the center. Connected, but not by roads. Some of these maps don't have any roads leading to Urethiru at all. They all place it in the mountains, or at least the hills. How do you reach a city if not by roads? Shallan asked. Noadan could walk there, or so he claimed. But others do not speak of riding or walking to Urethiru. True, there were few accounts of people visiting the city. It was a legend. Most modern scholars considered it a myth. She needed more information. She scrambled over to Yasna's trunk, digging out one of her notebooks. She said that Urethiru wasn't on the Shattered Plains, Shallan said. But what if the pathway to it is here? Not an ordinary pathway, though. Urethiru was the city of surgebinders, of ancient wonders like shard blades. Pattern said softly.
Shard blades are no wonder.
Shallan found the reference she was searching for. It wasn't the quote she found curious, but Yasna's annotation of it. Another folk tale, this one recorded in Among the Dark-Eyed, by Kalinam, page 102. Stories of instantaneous travel and the Oath Gates pervade these tales. Instantaneous travel. Oath Gates. That's what she was coming here for, Shallan whispered. She thought she could find a passageway here, on the plains. But they're barren stormlands. Just stone, creme, and great shells. She looked up at Pattern. We really need to get out there. Onto the Shattered Plains. Her announcement was accompanied by an ominous chime from the clock. Ominous in that it meant the hour was far later than she'd assumed. Storms? She needed to meet Adolin by noon. She had to leave in a half hour if she was going to meet him on time. Shallan yelped and ran for the washroom. She turned the spigot for water to fill the tub. After a moment of it spitting out dirty creme water, clean, warm water began to flow, and she put in the stopper. She put her hand underneath it, marveling yet again. Flowing warm water. Sabariel said that Artifabrians had visited recently, arranging to set up a fabriel that would keep the water in the cistern above perpetually warm, like the ones in Carbranth. "Aye," she said, shucking off her dressing gown, "am going to allow myself to grow very, very accustomed to this." She climbed into the tub as Pattern moved along the wall above her. She had decided not to be bashful around him. True, he had a male voice, but he wasn't really a man. Besides, there were spren everywhere. The tub probably had one in it, as did the walls. She'd seen for herself that everything had a soul or a spren or whatever. Did she care if the walls watched her? No. So why should she care about Pattern? She did have to repeat this line of reasoning every time he saw her undress. It would help if he weren't so blasted curious about everything. "The anatomical differences between genders are so slight," Pattern said, humming to himself, "yet so profound. And you augment them. Long hair, blush on the cheeks. I went and watched Sabariel bathe last night, and please tell me you didn't," Shallan said, blushing as she grabbed some pasty soap from the jar beside the iron tub. "But I just told you that I did. Anyway, I wasn't seen. I would not need to do this if you'd be more accommodating. I am not doing nude sketches for you." She'd made the mistake of mentioning that many of the great artists had trained themselves this way. After much pleading back home, she'd gotten several of the maids to pose for her, so long as she promised to destroy the sketches, which she had. She'd never sketched men that way. Storms, that would be embarrassing. She didn't let herself linger in the bath. A quarter hour later, by the clock, she stood dressed and combing her damp hair before the mirror. How would she ever go back to Yaakoved and a placid rural life again? The answer was simple. She probably would never return. Once that thought would have horrified her. Now it thrilled her, though she was determined to bring her brothers to the shattered plains. They would be far safer here than at her father's estates. And what would they be leaving behind? Barely anything at all. She'd begun to think it was a far better solution than anything else, and let them dodge the issue of the missing soul caster to an extent. She'd gone to one of the information stations connected to Tashik, there was one in every war camp, and paid to have a letter along with a span read sent by messenger from Valath to her brothers. It would take weeks to arrive, unfortunately, if it even did. The merchant she'd talked to at the information station had warned her that moving through Yaakoved was difficult these days, with the succession war. To be careful, she'd sent a second letter from Northgrip, which was as far from the battlefields as one could get. Hopefully at least one of the two would arrive safely. When she established contact again, she'd make a single argument to her brothers. Abandon the Devar estates. Take the money Yasna had sent and flee to the shattered plains. For now, she'd done what she could. She rushed through the room, hopping on one foot as she pulled on a slipper and passed the maps. I'll deal with you later. It was time to go woo her betrothed. Somehow. The novels she'd read made it seem easy. A batting of eyelashes, blushes at appropriate times. Well, she had that last one down in good measure. Except maybe the appropriate part. She buttoned up the sleeve over her safe hand, then paused at the door as she looked back and saw her sketchbook and pencil lying on the table. She didn't want to leave without those, ever again. She tucked both in her satchel and rushed out. On the way through the white marbled house, she passed Polona and Sabariel in a room with enormous glass windows, facing leeward over the gardens. Polona lay face down, getting a massage, completely bare-backed, while Sabariel reclined and ate sweets. A young woman stood at a lectern in the corner reciting poetry to them. Shallan had a difficult time judging those two. Sabariel. Was he a clever civil planner, or an indolent glutton? Both? Polona certainly did like the luxuries of wealth, but she didn't seem the least bit arrogant. Shallan had spent the last 3 days poring over Sabariel's house ledgers, and had found them an absolute mess. He seemed so smart in some areas. How could he have let his ledgers get so overgrown? Shallan wasn't especially good with numbers, not compared to her art, but she did enjoy math on occasion, and was determined to tackle those ledgers. Gaz and Vatha waited for her outside the doors. They followed her toward Sabariel's coach, which waited for her to use, along with one of her slaves to act as footman. En said he'd done the job before, and he smiled at her as she stepped up. That was good to see. She couldn't remember any of the five smiling on their trip out, even when she'd released them from the cage. "You're being treated well, En?" she asked as he opened the coach door for her.
"Yes, mistress."
"You'd tell me if you weren't?"
"Yes, mistress."
"And you, Vatha?" she asked, turning to him. "How are you finding your accommodations?" He grunted. "I assume that means they're accommodating?" she asked. Gaz chuckled. The short man had an ear for wordplay.
"You've kept your bargain," Vatha said. "I'll give you that. The men are happy."
"And you?"
"Bored. All we do every day is sit around, collect what you pay us, and go drinking."
"Most men would consider that an ideal profession." She smiled at En, then climbed into the coach. Vatha shut the door for her, then looked in the window.
"Most men are idiots."
"Nonsense," Shallan said, smiling. "By the law of averages, only half of them are." He grunted. She was learning to interpret those, which was essential to speaking Vathaese. This one roughly meant, "I'm not going to acknowledge that joke because it would spoil my reputation as a complete and utter dunnard."
"I suppose," he said, "we have to ride up top."
"Thank you for offering," Shallan said, then pulled down the window shade. Outside, Gaz chuckled again. The two climbed into the guard positions on the top back of the carriage, and En joined the coachman up front. It was a true proper coach, pulled by horses and everything. Shallan had originally felt bad about asking to use it, but Polona had laughed. "Take the thing whenever you want. I have my own, and if Turi's coach is gone, he'll have an excuse to not go when people ask him to visit. He loves that." Shallan closed the other window shade as the coachman started the vehicle rolling, then got out her sketchbook. Pattern waited on the first blank white page. "We are going to find out," Shallan whispered, "just what we can do."
"Exciting," Pattern said.
She got out her pouch of spheres and breathed in some of the stormlight. Then she puffed it out in front of her, trying to shape it, meld it. Nothing. Next, she tried holding a very specific image in her head. Herself, with one small change. Black hair instead of red. She puffed out the stormlight, and this time it shifted around her and hung for a moment. Then it, too, vanished. "This is silly," Shallan said softly, stormlight trailing from her lips. She did a quick sketch of herself with dark hair. "What does it matter if I draw it first or not? The pencils don't even show color."
"It shouldn't matter," Pattern said. "But it matters to you. I do not know why."
She finished the sketch. It was very simple. It didn't show her features, only really her hair, everything else indistinct. Yet when she used stormlight this time, the image took, and her hair darkened to black. Shallan sighed, stormlight leaking from her lips. "So how do I make the illusion vanish?"
stop feeding it.
How?
I am supposed to know this? Pattern asked. You are the expert on feeding.
Shallan gathered all of her spheres, several were now done, and set them on the seat across from her, out of reach. That wasn't far enough, for as her stormlight ran out, she breathed in using instincts she hadn't realized she had. Light streamed from across the carriage and into her.
I'm quite good at that, Shallan said sourly, considering how short a time I've been doing it.
Short time, Pattern said. But we first...
She stopped listening until he was done. I really need to find another copy of Words of Radiance, Shallan said, starting another sketch. Maybe it talks about how to dismiss the illusions. She continued to work on her next sketch, a picture of Sabariel. She'd taken a memory of him while dining the night before, just after returning from a session scouting Amaram's compound. She wanted to get the details of this sketch right for her collection, so it took some time. Fortunately, the level roadway meant no big bumps. It wasn't ideal, but she seemed to have less and less time these days, with her research, her work for Sabariel, infiltrating the Ghost Bloods, and meetings with Adolin Colin. She'd had so much more time when she was younger. She couldn't help thinking she'd wasted much of it. She let the work consume her. The familiar sound of pencil on paper, the focus of creation. Beauty was out there, all around. To create art was not to capture it, but to participate in it. When she finished, a glance out the window showed them approaching the pinnacle. She held up the sketch, studying it, then nodded to herself. Satisfactory. Next, she tried using stormlight to create an image. She breathed out a lot of it, and it formed immediately, snapping into an image of Sabariel sitting across from her in the carriage. He held the same position as he did in her sketch, hands out to slice food that was not included in her image. Shallan smiled. The detail was perfect. Folds in skin, individual hairs. She hadn't drawn those. No sketch could capture all the hairs on a head, all the pores in skin. Her image had these things, so it didn't create exactly what she drew, but the drawing was a focus, a model that the image built from.
"Mmm," Pattern said, sounding satisfied. "One of your most truthful lies. Wonderful."
"He doesn't move," Shallan said. "Nobody would mistake this for something living, never mind the unnatural pose. The eyes are lifeless. The chest doesn't rise and fall with breath. The muscles don't shift. It's detailed, but like a statue can be detailed yet still dead."
"A statue of light."
"I didn't say it isn't impressive," Shallan said. "But the images will be much harder to use unless I can give them life." How strange that she should feel that her sketches were alive, but this thing, which was so much more realistic, was dead. She reached out to wave her hand through the image. If she touched it slowly, the disturbance was minor. Waving her hand disturbed it like smoke. She noticed something else. While her hand was in the image... "Yes." She sucked in a breath and the image dissolved to glowing smoke, drawn into her skin. She could reclaim stormlight from the illusion. One question answered, she thought, settling back and making notes about the experience in the back of the notebook. She began packing up her satchel as the carriage arrived at the outer market, where Adolin would be waiting for her. They'd gone on their promised walk the day before, and she felt things were going well, but she also knew she needed to impress him. Her efforts with High Lady Navani had not been fruitful so far, and she really did need an alliance with the Colin house. That made her consider. Her hair had dried, but she tended to keep it long and straight down her back, with only its natural curl to give it body. The Alethi women favored intricate braids instead. Her skin was pale and dusted lightly with freckles, and her body was nowhere near curvaceous enough to inspire envy.
She could change all of this with an illusion, an augmentation. Since Adolin had seen her without, she couldn't change anything dramatic, but she could enhance herself. It would be like wearing makeup. She hesitated. If Adolin came to agree to the marriage, would it be because of her or the lies? Foolish girl, Shallan thought. You were willing to change your appearance to get Vatha to follow you and to gain a place with Sabariel, but not now? But capturing Adolin's attention with illusions would lead her down a difficult path. She couldn't wear an illusion always, could she, in married life? Better to see what she could do without one, she thought as she climbed out of the carriage. She'd have to rely instead upon her feminine wiles. She wished she knew if she had any.